Yeah.
My throat is really shitty right now.
What's going on?
It's just full of mucus.
That's awesome. Get rid of that shit.
Let me run upstairs real quick and get a water.
You do that. Cool. Okay, great. Actually, I think I'm going to use this time to record a phone call I've been dying to make to Steve Mnuchin. You know, he thought that it was okay to call me and harass me, so I'm gonna see if I can return the favor.
Hello?
Hi, is this Steve Mnuchin?
Yes, this is Steven Mnuchin.
Hi, it's Peter De Beer. We've spoken before. I'm a podcaster, run the show Neighbor Science.
Never heard of you.
Excellent. Okay, so I've called you to ask you about how the tax reforms that the current administration is working on, how will those affect inheritance tax? Because it seems like it basically just lets rich kids avoid paying any and all taxes on their inheritance, and you all seem to be insisting that it's intended to benefit the farmers of America.
Look, it sounds more like you should take Economics 101, but since we're already on the phone, I guess I'll just explain it to you. So, let's say you, I don't know, take money from the Secretary of State to let him sleep with your wife. That income will be taxed far less under our plan than under Obama's plan.
What? Okay, Stevie. Can I call you Stevie?
No.
Great. I feel like your obsession with women is unhealthy, but let's gloss over that little fact. Do you have any kids that might stand to benefit from not having to pay taxes for money they inherit at your death?
Yeah, my ex-wife has a few ungrateful little shits. I get partial custody of them, but I let Gorka babysit them while they're here.
Okay, great. Stevie, I understand that much of your wealth comes from a pyramid scheme that you spent many years investing in with Bernie Madoff.
Never heard of him.
Great. Don't you think that your ungrateful little shits should pay taxes when they inherit that wealth from you?
Oh, I'm going to have them pay taxes on it, but I won't give them any of the inheritance money, you know, to piss off my bitch ex-wife.
Wait, so you're saying that you don't support the current tax reforms? Because that would mean that you cannot force them to pay any taxes, and that they would probably inherit it all completely tax-free. Thanks, Steve. I'm glad we got that on record.
No, I do support them. This is something that I'm going to do this weekend. They've been working summer jobs at the Federalist to pay for this.
Okay, so, just to check. Are you suggesting that your children, all of whom
are... Ex-wife's children.
All of whom are under 19 years of age, should pay taxes for an inheritance they will never receive? And 50% of those taxes will likely go toward a military budget your children will probably never have to serve in.
Like I said, they're my ex-wife's children.
Great. Thanks so much, Stevie. I'll just summarize quickly and point out that this seems to be your sentiment regarding the general population. You support taxing the middle class for money inherited by wealthy brats. You want to make your brats pay for money they will never see, and you take no responsibility for your role as a parent.
Why should I? I divested from my children in the divorce.
Okay, great. Thanks, Stevie. I think you've provided some great quotes here for our listeners to better understand your very reasonable position on tax reform.
Great. If you don't mind, me and Rex Tillerson are making a deal right now that I'd like to get back to. Hey, Peter, ready to start?
Hey, man. Yeah, wait until you hear this call that I just had with Steven Mnuchin, but we'll get into that later.
Okay.
Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Neighbor Science. Just to let everyone know, this week's show is pre-recorded.
Yeah, Peter's not even a real person on this one. It's just a soundboard that I have.
You can get me to say very cool things.
Yeah, no, I can make you say whatever I want. I could make you say, like, the most ridiculous shit.
I support Donald Trump. Trump is awesome. Bernie Sanders sucks.
Yeah, so I'm Ryan. That is Soundboard impersonating Peter. And today we're going to talk about death, specifically the history and culture of funerary practices, as in what people do with their dead. There's a lot of weird, fun stuff in there. So we'll have a lot of stuff for you coming up.
Yeah, we were originally just going to do an episode on death, but we figured it's very frickin' depressing, and a lot of people tend to get very morbid around the subject, so we livened it up a bit by looking at funerals. And man, when we got into a bit of the research, you don't even have to go very far before you start finding some really strange crap.
Yeah, yeah. Also, we have a tendency to pick topics that are way too broad, like such as energy, and then have to record 3 episodes and still rush through everything. But yeah, I think this will be good.
I'm looking forward to today.
Yeah. So should we start with the history here?
Yeah, I definitely think so.
The grand timeline of every funerary practice ever in human history. We're going to go through that in about 3 minutes, okay?
Okay, and let's go.
All right, 60,000 years ago, Shannon R. Cave researchers found a burial site with pollen for various flowers and thought it was. 40,000 years ago, Spanish hillside remains of small fires and antlers. 33,000 years ago, Red Lady of Avalon. Okay, let's do it for real, though.
Yeah, no, there's no point in doing it that way. Everyone's going to sit there and just like, how do I slow-mo this so I can actually hear what they're saying?
When did they get a cattle auction guy to read their show notes?
6,000 years ago.
Yeah, so on that note, I determined that I could not do that job very well. So let's start over. The oldest known burial site currently is Shanidar Cave. It's from about 60,000 years ago.
Just to be specific, it's the oldest known Homo sapiens, guaranteed it was Homo sapiens burial site. There are older sites that are associated with Homo Neanderthalus and Homo erectus, because it has been shown that they had a tendency towards funeral type practices as well. But for the show, we'll focus on Homo sapiens.
Yeah, and so to make this even more specific, it's burial site where there was a ritual of, like a funeral ritual. Yeah. What happened was researchers found a burial site with pollen from various flowers around the area buried with the body. And so they thought it was, some sort of funeral practice. It turns out that it was not. The flowers came later from animals, and so it's not actually the oldest funeral site, but it is included in a lot of timelines, so I felt it should be included there.
Well, it is. It is interesting to look at how old it could possibly have been, this practice of venerating the dead.
Yep. And by the way, I'm doing all these dates as like thousands of years ago, because I am a super nerd atheist and don't want to use BC. That's literally the reason I'm doing that.
Well, just so that we're clear, modern historical practice is not to refer to it as BC, but rather to refer to it as BCE, with BCE meaning before Common Era.
And, right.
And ACE is after Common Era, or I think someone uses, I'm sure I read a history article where they refer to it as ACC.
I've never been a fan of that, though, because it's still basing the year on the supposed birth of Jesus. So it's still Christianized. They just kind of whitewashed the fact that our calendar is based on, you know, the history of a religious figure.
Yeah, well,
it's not Common Era either, because non-Western people don't use the same calendar, so.
Fair enough, fair enough. But then, like, we could also take that the extra step and say that 60,000 years would be measured according to the Julian calendar, which is very... Okay, but we're not going to go there.
All right. We'll talk about that on our Euclid and Jesus episode.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a good one.
Yeah, yeah. The next known one is from 40,000 years ago. It's a from a Spanish hillside. I don't think there's like a name for the site really. But there was, I stupidly didn't write this down, but if I remember correctly, it was a child's body buried in this hillside, and there were remains of small fires and like a ton of antlers. So unlike the flower pollen thing, this one is almost definitely not a coincidence, because what are the chances of antlers from a ton of different species being brought to one site where there's bones?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Probably pretty low. So I guess they had a bunch of fires and tossed antlers at the dead person. Sounds like an all right funeral practice, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
It'd be kind of hard to find that many antlers around now.
Yeah, we have sort of decimated that population.
Yeah, they probably still had megafauna at that point.
Yeah, it would have been cool. Have a bunch of people throw dead animal skull things at you.
Yeah, and then you could...
so you don't care.
Yeah, and then you could... drive away to a drive-in restaurant in your foot-powered car and have a person put a rack of mammoth ribs on your car and then it falls over?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows that the dinosaurs still existed.
Mammoths aren't dinosaurs, Peter. You're the worst soundboard.
You don't know that. You're not an archaeobiologist.
All right, I'm pausing this clip. Okay, 33,000 years ago, there is the famous in terms of this timeline, Red Lady of Paviland, and that was in Wales. A woman's bones were dyed with red ochre and buried in the ground in Wales, and so that one for sure is some sort of ritual funeral practice. I was surprised at first when I read this because it said Britain, and as we know, the English have always been backwards savages with no redeeming qualities. But then I scrolled down a bit and saw it was in Wales, so now I'm still confused as to how that was the earliest ritual burial.
Yeah, no, that is a bit strange.
I also wonder what they did with the... everything but the bones before they dyed them red?
I read a series of books when I was a teenager called the Earth's Children series, and gets really, really boring by the fifth book and the sixth book. But it was these lengthy volumes written by Jean Emmaüll, who... did a lot of archaeological research and anthropological research for her books, where she described life about 10 to 20,000 BC, more or less that time era. And it was life during the Ice Age in the greater Europe area, Eastern Europe, so on and so forth. And... one of the things they covered in that she covered in the books was various funeral practices and the rites and so on, and the taboos that were associated with it. And this is all based on actual research. And ochre, for instance, red ochre, is very prevalent in many of those early societies as a very... I'm trying to think of the right word. It's a very spiritual color that's associated with the natural spirit world. And it was used both in life and in death heavily. And one of the ways that they used to do things, they used to boil the some of the finding some of the digs that she went to, the skeletal remains that they found showed distinct traces of the having the flesh boiled off the bone. So it's presumed that after death, in order to preserve the bones themselves, the people would be boiled, and the flesh then stripped from the bone, and then the bones themselves would then be painted with various spiritual stuff like red ochre.
I wonder what they did with the broth from that.
Yeah, I'm,
you wouldn't
I'm
want to be wasteful and not use it for soup, I think.
That is a good point. It might have been that then got added to funeral pyres. But I'll be dead honest and say that I don't actually know.
I mean, you gotta figure if they didn't use that to make soup, then that's just like a huge source of food waste, and probably the reason that mammoths were hunted into extinction.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, definitely, definitely.
I think I just solved an anthropological mystery here.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think we should take this show and do a paper on it and submit it and go collect some Nobel Prizes.
Yeah, we should we should have Chet on and ask him to talk about it. He's an anthropologist.
Yeah, yeah, no, Chet, I'm dying to get Chet on the show. but yeah, that'll have to wait for when he's good and ready. One other thing that I do know that came from these funeral practices way back when is the origin of soap as we know it now. And obviously I'm not talking about your big beauty product soaps that are chemical combination, blah, blah, blah. I'm talking about your cold, I think it's called cold processed soap, where what you do is you basically mix lye with wood ash, and it forms soap, and you can add in different plant materials and so on for scent and so on. And
it's lye is made from wood ash and water, and yeah, to make soap, what you do is you mix lye with animal tallow.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Usually beef tallow.
So it's mixing fat with wood ash and water, basically. So what would happen is burial wasn't really that big a thing for quite a large span of human history, and funeral pyres and bonfires would be set up, and afterwards all that ash would wash away into the riverbeds and so on, and where that ash then mixed with the water and the fat that had been burning down from the people that had been burned, there would be this rich soapy substance that was actually then used to clean stuff. So, yeah. I can't even remember where I read that, but I do remember reading that that's the origin of soap as we know it today. That's where it was first discovered.
Interesting.
Hmm.
All right. So, the next known funeral practice is from 7,000 years ago, and that is the oldest known dolmen. And a dolmen is a single-chamber megalithic tomb. It's basically a bunch of rocks piled together into an enclosed space. Kind of looks like something from the Flintstones.
Okay, so this would more or less coincide with the agricultural revolution and the first settling of cities.
Yeah, although the oldest known ones were in Western Europe, and I would think that cities would have come up in Western Europe quite a bit after the ones in the Middle East.
No, but fair enough. I suppose large villages and towns would be more appropriate here.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I don't know, I think it'd be kind of cool to be buried in a dolmen.
Yeah.
Being buried in a pile of rocks. Seems cool. Yeah. They look cool. Especially the old ones that got, like, grass and moss and lichen on them and stuff.
Yeah, no, it visually very appealing.
Yeah.
Space-wise, I'm not sure we could really accommodate most people. But, you know, you're special, so...
You just do them like clown cars. Have, like, 18 people in a one-person-sized one.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you don't have to be comfortable when you're dead. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the legality of that. Because I know a friend of mine is a lawyer, and he went to go get a headstone done. He was diagnosed with a terminal illness, and he went to go to a funeral home to have a headstone done, and he said that he would like his tombstone to read, "Here lies a lawyer and an honest man." And he was told that they're very sorry, but it can't be done because you're not allowed to bury two people in the same grave.
That's pretty good.
Oh, my jokes are just absolutely classic.
Yeah. All right, so next, something we're all pretty familiar with. 6,000 years ago, embalming was originated by the Egyptians. Embalming's pretty fun. You know, you preserve a body so that when someone comes across it later on, they have nightmares for the rest of their life.
Yeah, and it's also a lot of fun.
That's my goal when I die.
Look, it's also a lot of fun to perform, to be able to extract organs and tissue and all sorts of stuff from inside the body using very, very advanced techniques that involve the smallest of slits and incisions in the body, so as to reduce the potential for damage. I remember when I was at school learning about embalming and mummification and all of that stuff, that it was this really, for its time, it was medically astounding what they were able to do. You know, taking something like taking the lungs out through the nose, and I can't remember the details, but I do remember being astounded.
You know what I just realized I'm pissed off about? They taught us all about mummification, and they had us dissect frogs, but they never had us mummify a frog. That would have been a much better learning experience.
Like, why not, though? Like, why not teach kids how to mummify frogs?
Yeah, I don't need to know how a fucking frog works. I know how they work, okay? They get government water in them, and then they turn gay. I don't need to know any more than that. But yeah, it would be helpful to know how to mummify someone. In case I come across a dead body, I am going to mummify it. And well, since I don't know how, I'm just going to end up butchering it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's like they don't even consider the fact that you might be stuck out in a remote location with someone who has just died from unknown causes, and that you might need to find a way to preserve those remains for forensic scientists that are going to look at it later on in order to determine that it wasn't you that killed them. So basically, they just want to send you to prison. That's what it comes down to.
It's especially unforgivable because these are people who grew up with, like, Gilligan's Island. So, like, obviously, if anyone died on Gilligan's Island, they would have had to do something about the body. Are you just going to bury it? That's not a proper way to get rid of your dead.
Yeah.
Mummification is the only way to go.
Definitely. And, you know, if modern movies and television have taught us anything, it's that if you're going to bury the dead, you really should tie their shoelaces together. So that when they rise up as the undead, they can't really chase after you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. now, even though this is when embalming began, this isn't like their very first funerary practice. Before this, they buried their bodies in shallow oval pits with some burial goods in them. But later on, they did figure out how to embalm bodies.
Which turned out to be really useful.
Yeah.
If you were a pharaoh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, about 500 years later, 5,500 years ago. That's when most dolmen were built. So while the Egyptians were, you know, taking people's organs out and preserving bodies forever, the Europeans were just like throwing rocks together and sticking bodies in there. So, you know, Western culture, not so advanced.
Not so advanced. I'm pretty sure if you go look at Chinese culture at more or less the same time, they were doing some pretty cool stuff, like burning people in large pyres.
Another interesting thing about Western culture, the term is usually said by people who are east of Europe to or west of Europe to refer to Europe. So, anyway, 5,400 years ago is when actual mummification becomes normal in Egypt. So, I'm not really clear on what the difference is between embalming and mummification proper, but
Well, with embalming, in embalming specifically, you are taking the regular liquids and stuff that will rot over time out of the body and replacing it with stuff like formaldehyde. And with mummification, there's also herbs and stuff and ointments that gets sprayed on the skin on the outside as well, and it is then wrapped up in the bandaging and all of that that ensures its longevity. So it's like embalming 2.0.
Okay.
And I'm a little bit surprised that it took them like 600 years to perfect that process.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was that they didn't perfect it, but it was just like a normal thing to do. You know, I'm sure the first people who got mummified, everyone was like, wait, what? You're doing what?
Yeah. You're gonna just imagine. What do you mean we can still go see your grandmother? She died like 50 years ago. Yeah. But we figured out how to make her look like she's still 43.
Don't you realize that in 6,000 years, you're gonna be, a villain on a cartoon about a team of teenagers and a dog that solve mysteries. So, I cobbled together this timeline from a couple different sources. I put this one in here. I don't really know why it's in there, but I'm just going to say anyway, 4,400 years ago, Stonehenge was completed.
I know why you did that. I mean, it's actually pretty obvious that Stonehenge looks a lot like headstones on a grave. So yeah, that.
Okay, like, all right.
I mean, the clearly Stonehenge was originally intended as a gigantic burial site for those giant alien
giants.
Alien giants. from Planet X, who will come back. They are coming back. They did the last sweep past us, and they realized we weren't ready yet. Because, I mean, all we know about them really at this point is on the History Channel.
They probably were just waiting until we had a Stonehenge. I don't know. But now that it's kind of ruined, they might just skip us by again.
It's true, it is ruined. Like,
there are those history nerds that have built their own Stonehenge to like prove it can be done. It can be done without cranes and power tools and stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah, there's a fascinating video of this one guy that's able to use leverage, and on his own, he builds this Stonehenge-style thing. Literally, on his own, using nothing but like a pebble, he manages to pivot a 6-ton block of granite, and it's freaking amazing.
I think it was a hoax. It's probably styrofoam.
I suppose it's possible, but yeah, I was convinced by it, and so I'm just gonna stick with what I believe in spite of all critical analysis.
All right, so 3,000 to 3,500 years ago, we have the beginning of ancestor worship in China.
Why do you guys do that? Why do you switch from 3,000 instead of 3,000 to 3,500? It's so confusing for me. I've had people doing it to me all week.
3,500 sounds less unwieldy than 3,500. That's like 10 syllables.
So then why didn't you say 3,000?
Because that sounds just ridiculous. Nobody would say that.
But sometimes I just wish that pragmatism could go out the window. You know, I know what this is.
I mean, Peter, would you say, like, 60,000? Come on. No, you wouldn't say that.
What would I say? 60,000?
600,000.
600,000.
Yeah.
Is this so that you can squeeze it all into 140 characters?
Because
you know that's not...
It's actually... it started with telegrams, but yes. Basically, that's the idea.
Ah, okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, I suppose pragmatics more important than aesthetics.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so 2,800 years ago, we have the Greeks beginning to use... funeral pyres to cremate their dead. And to be clear, they were cremating before that, but this is where they started using pyres to do it.
So before it was just like, just toss some paraffin on them and just light it. And so
yeah, I'm guessing that's probably what they were doing.
Yeah.
But now they do it properly, you know, they put you on a bunch of wood and then they burn you that way.
That's great. Thanks, Greeks.
Yeah. Very innovative. Way more innovative and advanced than mummification.
Yeah, no, definitely. Me like fire. Me no like formaldehyde.
So this is an exciting one. 2,353 years ago, we have the first true mausoleum built for the Carian ruler Mausolus. So that's the name... That's the origin of the name mausoleum, which is one of the coolest words associated with death, in my opinion.
Indeed, it's a beautiful word. But now I'm really interested to know the Carian ruler. What was
Carian? Not Carian like dead flesh. Carian like it's Indo-European group of people.
Ah, okay. A quick search shows me Caria was a region of Western Anatolia. Not that I have any idea where that is.
It's Turkey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Western okay. Turkey.
Okay, so it was still the Greek times.
Yeah. So, mausoleums. Pretty cool, you know. Great associations with anything haunted. You know, they look cool. Lots of famous ones. Taj Mahal is a famous mausoleum.
And probably one of the most beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it.
I wouldn't mind being buried in a mausoleum. I think I would prefer that to a dolmen.
No, I'd still go for the dolmen. I'm you know how much I love primitivism.
I don't know, there's this cool one, the Lowell Observatory in Flagstaff, Arizona. Here, I'll send you a link to it. It's really cool looking. But anyway, so the next thing we got is 2,230 years ago, Hokkaido-yama tomb, which is the oldest known burial chamber in Japan.
Okay, cool. Sorry, just looking at this Lowell Observatory one, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Although, wait now, this picture has gone through a Snapchat filter.
Or an Instagram filter, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's filtered, either way. So it's beautiful when I'm looking at it, but then I look closely and I'm like, oh wait, fake.
I mean, I don't know, I'm totally fine with my mausoleum being put through a Instagram filter.
Well,
I have no problem with that.
I mean, in this day and age, you kind of have to, otherwise no one's going to like it on Instagram, and no one's going to share it, and what would be the point then?
Yeah. So okay, unfortunately, the Hokkaido-yama tomb, no real remains of it other than the foundations. So we don't really have at least I don't have a good idea of what it looks like because I'm not one of them archaeologist types.
Well, that's interesting. Has it withered away over time, or has it been raided, or like I wonder why there's nothing left of it.
Well, there's some sketches that I see that it kind of looks like it was like an earthworks, so it's primarily made of of dirt and clay and stuff. So it probably eroded.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe it's destroyed in like one of the big earthquakes in Japan or something.
It's entirely possible. Yeah,
I'm sure. It took a long time for them to figure out earthquake-proof buildings.
Yeah, no, it's strange that. But mind you, being that they're the lost tribe of Israel,
so they're actually they actually should be way smarter than that because they're Western, and therefore more advanced.
Exactly, exactly.
And then also, they're Israelites, and so they're evil Jews, and so they should be even more advanced than Westerners, but also more primitive and savage.
Maybe that's why they closed themselves off for so long, is so that they didn't have to constantly hide the fact that they were more advanced because they were evil Jews. Fascinating theories.
That's now the official lore of neighbor science. Japan is isolationist because they're evil Jews.
Love it. Okay, next up, we're looking at...
Yeah, the next one is one of my favorite things. Emperor Qin Shi Huang was buried with his terracotta warriors, which...
The terracotta army, which is...
Yeah, honestly, one of the coolest things to be buried with.
Yeah, no, let's face it. Having 1,000-odd statues, each one unique. So they weren't like... There wasn't like a Chinese factory where they did low-cost production of these things. It was handcrafted... it must have taken years to complete. Yeah, absolutely fascinating and beautiful history.
Yeah. So yeah, so far my list is when I die, I'm going to be buried in a dolmen inside of a mausoleum with I'm gonna go big. I'm gonna say 10,000 terracotta warriors. Because you know 1,000 is just not enough in today's advanced times. You know. American soldiers, they'll come in and fuck those 1,000 terracotta warriors up in no time.
Yeah,
but 10,000, they're gonna have to send in some bombers.
Okay, but it wouldn't take more than one bomb. You do realize that?
I'm a brilliant military strategist, so they're gonna be dropping a lot of bombs.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I have seen your military strategies, and they are genius. So yeah. I'm not going to argue further.
Did you see how many white people I killed on November 4th with Antifa? I was the unit commander, so you know.
Antifa super soldiers unite.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm gonna have terracotta Antifa super soldiers.
Oh god, that's gonna be the most confusing archaeological find in like forever.
Researchers say the terracotta army was originated by a Nelson T. Krang tweet. Krang T. Nelson, sorry bud. 1993 years ago, we have a known example of Native Americans being buried with burial goods. So they had, you know, one of the most common tropes in funerary practices is giving stuff to the person to take with them when they die. And so we know for certain that Native Americans were doing this as well. Not to say that they were not doing it earlier than that. That's just the known example that we have.
Okay, before you carry on, yeah, but before you go on to the next point, on that point of being buried with your goods, there was an actress, I'm just quickly looking up her name, Sandra Eileen West. She was a Texas oil heiress, and a and a Beverly Hills socialite.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know, it's terrible. She died in March of 1977, and she had a very unusual burial request that her brother needed to bury her in her 1964 powder blue Ferrari 330 while wearing a lacy nightgown in order for him to get the inheritance. And yeah, they did it. They dug a really massive hole, and they lowered her in the car into the hole, and then covered it all up with cement.
Well, you know what they say, you gotta spend money to make money.
I'm just like, what? Oh my god! Rich people confuse the shit out of me.
Alright, so, 1700 years ago, we have the development in evil Jew isolationist land, Japan, of their unique keyhole-shaped burial grounds.
So, like, yeah, I've seen a few of those, and like I gotta say, I don't really understand the thinking behind it.
I'm guessing that it opens a portal into the center of the earth, so that the body can go to hell.
Okay. And the spirit then ascends to heaven?
No, it goes to hell.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize Jews had a hell. I thought that was exclusive to Christianity.
Well, that's an innovation of Shintoism. They strongly believe in hell, and yeah, if you do anything bad, that's where you go. And if you do anything good, you go there as well.
Oh,
hell
nice.
Is actually the only place that you go after you die. That's why they cherish life so much.
Ah, see, now there's a really good way to go about it. Stop rewarding.
I know, very wholesome.
Dying.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Rewarding them for dying and just like...
If you die, you fucked
if
up.
If you die,
okay.
You're fucked.
Yeah.
You're fucked. So stay alive no matter what.
Damn, I actually like this a lot. I think my burial ground is going to be keyhole shaped, so that I go to hell, and then I'll appreciate life more.
So you're going to have a keyhole shaped dolmen inside a keyhole shaped mausoleum?
No, I think the mausoleum is going to be key shaped, so that I can for sure go to hell.
Ah, I like it. I like it. Where you will have 10,000 Antifa super soldiers to protect you.
Yes, exactly. Gotta slay the king of hell somehow.
It should be fun though. Like I've been.
Yeah, I have a song specifically for that. By Natural Snow Buildings. It's called "Slayer of the King of Hell."
Nice.
Yeah, it should be just long enough. I think it's about an hour and 15 minutes long. So. Should be just long enough for me and my Antifa super soldiers to slay the king of hell.
Sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah. So, on that note, the next thing is very unreasonable. This is sati, which is the custom of Hindu widows burning themselves or being burned with her dead husband. This practice has been outlawed numerous times in Indian history. Good. That's bad. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah. Please,
definitely not the burning them part, but, you know, also not the burning yourself part. But, yeah, if someone's husband dies, you shouldn't burn them. I think that's a good lesson we've learned.
I mean, obviously what they're basically trying to do is they're trying to say, you didn't make good enough sandwiches, your husband died, it's time for you to die as well.
Yeah. Going to the great kitchen in the sky.
Yeah, and like, if it was Japan, they'd be going into...
The great deepest... kitchen in the ground. The great oven in the ground. Yeah.
Okay.
Alright. Oh yeah, so the next one, not very good. 1100 years ago, Vikings, they had funerals where they often did ritual sacrifices of Viking peasants.
Great!
So going along with my theory that Europeans are backwards savages, and anyone who worships and idolizes Western culture is a huge dingus. Yeah, Vikings sacrificed peasants. Cool.
Fascinating. Another interesting thing about Viking funerals and whatnot, there's recently been a bit of argument in archaeological circles about whether or not Viking women were venerated in funeral practices. There was a dig site found a while ago that they attributed to, they identified the main remains in the burial site as being that of a Viking warrior. And recently, some DNA studies of done on the remains have found that, in fact, it was a Viking woman. So it was. So now they're having to rethink Viking culture and the role played by women. Also, I do think that they need to watch the show Vikings so that they'll understand that women were just as powerful as men when it came to doing everything in Viking societies. It was a lot more feminist back then than it is now.
Take that, the golden one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a lot about Viking culture that was not even remotely feminist, but in this one regard, we've put a lot of our own biases in modern society with our innate sexism that's been built up over the last few hundred years.
When in reality, Vikings were the first slay queens.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right, so the next one we got is 500 years ago. There's actually two known items here. One is Aztecs are known to celebrate the Day of the Dead, which is pretty interesting. I kind of thought Day of the Dead came from Spanish culture, but I guess that was some racism in me. It was actually from the Aztecs. So that's pretty cool. And also, Hawaiians are known to bury their dead and then light a fire on the grave that must be maintained for 10 days, which sounds pretty cool to me. That's pretty good funeral practice.
I do know that that practice of keeping a fire over the grave, it was done in several very ancient societies as a means of preservation. The heat for that long a time gets rid of any of the liquids that would result in the rotting of the corpse. Hmm. And so it was done to get rid of smells and to ward off evil and that kind of stuff, because obviously a smelling corpse would later on be associated with the stench of evil, obviously.
Hmm. Okay. That's cool. So, only 10 years later, 490 years ago, we have the most famous mausoleum, the Taj Mahal, was built.
Yeah, I read something interesting about the Taj Mahal the other day, regarding how much, gold went into the building. I can't remember now exactly how much it was, so I'm just very quickly looking it up.
I don't have anything to say right now, because I'm trying to blow my nose. So I don't sound like a weirdo.
Yeah, the Taj Mahal actually has, I mean, there's lots of really fun stuff about it. It did take approximately 22 years to build. It was built by the Shah Jahan, and it was dedicated to his wife. It's in... For those who want to look it up, it's in Agra in India. And it isn't a Hindu tomb, which is what a lot of people assume. It is, in fact, an Islamic tomb. And it took about 20,000 people to build it.
So it was actually built by 20,000 people. It was just ordered by that guy.
Yeah, it was built by 20,000 people over the space of 22 years so that one guy could sort of pay homage to his dead wife.
Yeah. We think of that as like, oh, wow, he's so dedicated to his wife. But if he were really dedicated to his wife, he would have built that shit himself.
Yeah, not only that, she died while giving birth to their 14th child.
Jesus like, Christ.
I'm like, what? And I remember when I first heard that, I was like, why didn't she die sooner?
Yeah. Also, I mean, that would have been... how come everyone's a descendant of Genghis Khan, but not that guy? He had 14 damn kids.
I think Abraham only had 12.
Yeah. Okay, so the next one we got, 200 years ago, is the first time that coffin was draped with a national flag, and that was during the Napoleonic Wars. So, all those burials you see of American soldiers with the flag over their coffin, thank France for that.
As with so much about American culture.
And then also, this is when body snatching becomes a concern, and I'm guessing that's because that was the golden age of mad scientists, which I wish I could have been a part of.
Yeah, before. I would have loved to have been a Dr. Frankenstein back
Fuck
in
yeah,
the day.
Dude. Yeah.
I would have had so much fun. No government regulations to stop you from, you know, exhuming some bodies and strapping them together and jolting them with electric eels and, oh man.
So I actually have a theory about the story of Frankenstein, and I did my final college assignment on this, which is the real creature from Frankenstein was not animated by electricity at all. It doesn't mention electricity being used there. It does mention a storm happening, but it doesn't mention the storm having anything to do with his coming alive. But it does mention repeatedly a chemical apparatus. So I think that the creature from Frankenstein was actually animated by chemicals.
I should have known that the monster of Frankenstein was a drug addict. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, like, so, several of my friends, clearly he's only animated by chemical substances.
180 years ago... the Chinese are burying people on the sides of mountains, which is fucking awesome. It's a practice called hanging coffins. So they put a body in a coffin and they basically put them up on the side of a mountain on these big, like, racks.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I want my dolmen mausoleum terracotta army to be on the side of a mountain.
I'm not sure how practical that is, but you know what, for you, Ryan...
It'll be hard to put a keyhole-shaped mound on the side of a mountain, but I'm going to make someone do it. I'm going to get rich and make someone do it.
Yeah, yeah, and let's face it, that's what money's for.
Yeah, exactly. 150 years ago, the U.S. begins embalming dead during the Civil War, so only took us
5,850 years.
Yeah, yeah, to catch up with the Egyptians. So, Western culture, pretty advanced, folks.
Yeah!
And speaking of the advanced nature of Western culture, in 1884, cremation becomes legal in England. So, up until then, you were not allowed to cremate your dead. You had to bury them.
I see you asked here whether or not that's a religious thing.
Yes.
I have no idea, but I thought I'd point out the fact that you asked.
I did indeed, and I did not answer that question.
I do know that the reason that it became legal again is because they started running out of space, and the amount of money that... And I mean, how much you paid the funeral home to bury you would determine how deeply you were buried. And... if you didn't have those extra few shillings to pay for a deeper grave, it was very likely that someone would exhume your body and sell it for nefarious purposes. Like, I can't think of what to do with dead bodies, but if you go take one look on the internet, I'm pretty sure you're going to find some really sick stuff that people can come up with.
So, about that, so, you know, there's these parts of England, like the really, like, pretty old parts where it's very, like, all the stonework and stuff is very dark, and they always say that's from the early industrial period where they were just burning coal constantly, and so, you know, it's collected coal soot. I like to think that some of that is dead bodies.
Yeah.
It's smoke from cremation.
Yes. Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with that. It really fits my morbid worldview of the Brits.
Yeah. And I should note, by this point, I don't remember if it was before this or around the same time, but this is when they started doing, like, closed chamber cremation. So instead of, like, having just an open, like, funeral pyre like they had in Greece, they would put you, like, inside basically an oven and burn your body that way. They still had to vent the exhaust somewhere, though. So still a chance that all that soot is partially dead bodies.
It's still a chance, and I'm going to go with that. I'm going to stick with that. I like that as a narrative.
Yep. So 25 years later, in 1909, Crane and Breed build the first motorized hearse.
So before that, it was just horse and cart?
Yeah, I guess so. Or just pallbearers.
Man, you really didn't want to die far away from a funeral, from a graveyard.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if people, like, took their dying grandpa or whatever to the graveyard, and they're just like, all right, this is where you live now. We don't quite know when you're going to die, but not about to carry your ass miles just to get you back here.
I'm so glad you could still walk while we did this, but just in case you're thinking of leaving, broken kneecaps.
Don't worry, Grandpa. We'll bring you snacks.
That's so mean.
So the final date we got on our timeline, and then we'll get into some stuff that Peter found. In 1997, we have cremated remains begin being launched into space, which is fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Because let's face it, we've said this so many times before, but it always bears saying, everything is cooler when you put space in front of it.
Yes, exactly. So I kind of also want this to be part of my funerary practice.
So what we're going to do, and I figured this out when I first saw this outline. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to take your dolmen inside your keyhole-shaped mausoleum with your terracotta super soldiers, Antifa super soldiers, and the mountainside that it is on. And we're going to use advanced technology to shrink you down to the size of a microsatellite. And we're going to put you on a Tesla rocket to be launched into space.
Okay. That's one idea. My other idea, I haven't mentioned this yet, but a lot of people nowadays probably know about this. You can actually get your cremains compressed into a diamond. So my idea is, my body is going to be put into a dolmen inside a mausoleum with Antifa super soldiers on a keyhole-shaped burial mound on the side of a mountain. But I'm going to have the burial guys cut off just my penis, cremate that, turn that into a diamond, and then launch that into space so that I can seed space with my DNA or whatever. Yeah.
Now the question becomes, are alien civilizations advanced enough to be able to find that diamond and then...
Oh, and turn it back?
And then, and figure out what it's made of. Because if they can, then are you sending them unsolicited dick pics?
They're going to get the results from a computer, and they're going to be, like, holding it in their hand, like, holding it really close to their face, and then they're going to see the screen, and they're going to be like, oh, God, come on, man!
That was completely unsolicited.
That was my goal the whole time.
Oh, God.
No, alternatively, they could somehow maybe turn it back into me, and then I will be in two places. One in hell, and two on an alien planet. So,
yeah, actually, that. You know. Yeah, let's go with that one. The question, of course, is, will your diamond penis be significant enough for them to decide to reanimate you?
Are you asking whether or not I have a small dick?
No, I'm asking how big your hands are.
Okay. They're huge. Huge hands.
Huge hands. Okay.
All right. So what do you got, Peter?
In my research, I found, while Ryan was looking into the history of funeral practices, I went and looked for the really strange stuff that...
Give me some credit. I also looked whether or not you can send your cremated penis into space. So,
yeah.
Don't sell me short.
I'm not taking anything away from Ryan's research here. And technically, Ryan's research is... my research is Ryan's research because I'm just a soundboard right now.
Right.
Yeah, I've found 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 7 different funeral practices from around the world that are very odd. So I'm just going to give a quick explanation of all of those. The native tribes of the Ifugao, I can never say it right, and I actually spoke to a Filipino about how to pronounce it, and
I'm wrong.
The Ifugao, province, which is in the Philippines, obviously. They go by many names, but I'm gonna just stick with Ifugao. When a member of an Ifugao tribe dies, those close to the deceased will set to work at preparing for the mourning process. Although the spouse is expressly forbidden from having anything to do with this process, the male relatives will build a chair, which will be used to prop the dead body up for the mourning period, which can be up to 8 days. The body is then washed, blindfolded, and set up near the front door of the house, with a fire burning nearby the entire time. This serves, obviously, to keep away insects and to dry the corpse out. The spouse is forbidden to see the body once people have started to bring offerings, which they are also forbidden to indulge in. This means that spouses usually spend the mourning period in other rooms of the house or in another house entirely. If they have only one room, they may share it with the corpse, provided that they don't look at it. On the fourth day of the mourning period, the body is taken out of the chair and its skin is peeled off. This is one of the most popular parts of the funeral, as the tribesmen believe it helps with fertility. I'm not going to comment yet. The skin is then buried underneath the house of the deceased. The body may also be buried on the fourth day or kept out for another 4 days. Whenever it is ultimately buried, it is also placed under the house. Sometimes, several years after the funeral, someone close to the deceased may experience symptoms that are said to be caused by the soul of the late friend or family member. This requires that the bones be exhumed so that the spirit can join them in a feast. And the bones are then given a second funeral.
I wonder if they burn the fire near the bones again. I don't know.
I don't know. I read all of this, and I just remember thinking, what? Why? Like, I can understand the thing about having a fire nearby, but nothing else about that makes any sense. And the thing with these kinds of rituals is it's usually based on superstitious beliefs that have been ingrained over time. But I can't think of anything that would lead you to believe that skinning a corpse would lead to increased fertility. Like, how?
I got nothing.
Yeah, yeah, no, and I think you're going to have nothing for several of these. The next one is the Anga people, who are an extremely isolated mountain tribe in the Aseki district of Papua New Guinea. Although the tribe has been studied for over a century, their isolation has led to a number of conflicting reports as to the origins of the mummies dotted around the area. In addition to reports that the tribe practiced cannibalism, which some locals say was practiced on the island, but not with them, there are also claims that they drained body fat from the dead and used it to cook.
See, that's just smart.
Exactly. Zero waste, people. Zero waste. What is indisputable is the fact that there are a number of mummies in the region that are curled up in baskets or propped up with bamboo. Some people say that the mummies were embalmed using salt during the Second World War, but the more popular theory is that the mummies were created as part of a centuries-old ritual that involved smoking corpses for months on end before covering them in red clay. Some Christian missionaries brought the practice to an end in 1949, although the locals...
Dicks.
Yeah, I know, right? Although the locals continue to maintain the mummies, which can be found in a number of areas in the region up to this day. So if you ever want to go and see a real-life mummy, go to Papua New Guinea.
Christians ruin everything cool.
They really do. And then they want to foist other crap onto us.
And they get mad when you don't say happy holidays. Or when you do say happy holidays.
Yeah. Like, I'm actually quite lucky, or I thought I would be lucky, being in the Middle East, that I wouldn't have to say Merry Christmas, but now it turns out Christmas is huge here, in the middle
of...
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Dude, people have this very misguided conception of the Middle East, where they think that it's all old-school conservative Islam, but I swear to God... There is more Americanization here than there was back in South Africa, which is considered very westernized.
Right.
So, I mean, about two roads...
So, I mean, is it just like they celebrate the commercial part of it, where they, like, give each other presents and shit? Or is
Okay. Christmas, the decorations, the...
So they don't associate it with Christianity, though? Or do they?
No, you've got to remember that Jesus was a... Jesus is a character.
Oh, he's
within,
a prophet. Yeah.
He is a figure within Islam. But I think that it's really got more to do with the commercial side of things. I mean, there is a Christian population here, and there's no friction between the various religious portions of society here. But And I'm only going to get to experience it full on next month for the first time myself, because I've only been here since just after Christmas last year. But yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. I've been thinking lately that, like, the next move for capitalists is going to have to be creating new holidays where you have to, you're, like, obligated to buy each other shit. So we got Christmas where you have to buy people presents, and we got Halloween... We have to buy children candy. They're trying to do the same thing with Valentine's Day. You know, if you got a girlfriend, chances are they're going to want you to do something for them on Valentine's Day. But that's really it. They need some more holidays, you know?
Yeah. And
force you to buy things.
Also, I think Black Friday is getting a bad reputation, so they need a good PR spin on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so next up on my list is Tonga. For those of you who don't know, it's a small nation that's spread across roughly 170 or so islands in Polynesia. And it's the last remaining kingdom of the South Pacific. Their monarchy stretches back over 1,000 years, and although the last king, Tupou V, enacted a number of changes to make the country more democratic, they still treat their royal families with extreme reverence. The rules surrounding the burial of their kings are the most telling example of this reverence. Tongan kings are considered to be so important that nobody is allowed to touch them during their life, and only a select few may touch them after their death. These people are known as Nima Tapu, which translates to sacred hands. Once these people have prepared the king's body, they must spend the rest of the mourning period locked away from the public. During this time, they are forbidden to use their hands at all. I'm not even going to get into the logistics of that. The mourning period lasts for 100 days. That's 1/3 of your year that you can't hold your penis while taking a piss. Okay? Since it's considered a very impractical rule, the Nima Tapu have servants to shower them with their every desire while they await the end of the mourning period. Okay? So they're not allowed to touch themselves, but other people are allowed to touch them. I want you to see who gets to benefit from this little... anyway.
Sounds like it's better to be a Nima Tapu than an actual king.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not a bad deal, considering that the old method of dealing with the issue of people touching the king's body was to either kill them or chop off their hands.
I think I would take being killed over getting my hands chopped off, but I'm not sure.
I'd choose to sway opinion into making sure that the new legislation is passed.
That is not one of the options in this hypothetical, Peter.
It totally has to be, because that's how it ended up. Okay. Sticking with that region of the world, Fiji, which is also a pretty small country, so it's not really surprising that some of their more unusual traditions were practiced by a number of different tribes across their various islands. One of the death traditions was the killing of healthy family members, which could happen in one of two ways. The first is that a person would approach their parents or vice versa and let them know that enough is enough. They've become too much of a burden and it's time to call it quits. The family would then discuss whether the parents would like to be strangled by their own children or buried alive. But the actual dying part was not negotiable. It was a tribal chief. If it was a tribal chief who died, there was a 9-day period where women lashed men with shell-lined whips, while the men used bamboo to fire hard clay at the woman. Self-inflicted wounds were also common as a way to mourn, and this would include people cutting off their own pinky fingers or toes, while women would also burn themselves. The final and most famous practice was to strangle people the deceased was close to during life. This usually included, but was not limited to, wives of the deceased men. Wives, plural. The belief behind this was that they could accompany the dead to the afterlife, kind of like a Ferrari. A major influence on this culture of voluntary death was also the fact that many Fijians believed that you enter the afterlife in the same state as you left life, which means any disabilities or disfigurements would be with you forever. So many believed it was better to make the move when they were healthy rather than risk being maimed for all eternity. Unsurprisingly, the popularity of this tradition has dwindled in the 20th century. Thank goodness.
So do you enter the afterlife dead?
I would assume so.
Okay. It says the same state as you left life, so if you die of natural causes, then...
My favorite here...
Would you just be dead? I don't know.
My favorite here is those who would maim themselves by cutting off a pinky or a pinky toe, or, you know, and then later on, when they died, wouldn't they then be maimed for all eternity?
Yeah, I mean, the worst one would be burning yourself...
Yeah, that can't be a fun way to spend all of eternity.
Yeah, you'd be a horrific nightmare creature.
Sex is going to be really difficult. Okay, next up is South Korea, which, as you know, is about... Well, if you do know, I know you're terrible with geography. But for those of us who do know, it's about half the size of Britain.
Yeah, I know. I know South Korea. It's where Genghis Khan is from.
Touche. Yeah. Okay, so
stupid. Jeez.
It for those who have been to South Korea, I was there about 15 years ago, and it's a very mountainous country, and there are about 50 million people living there, and so you're left with a kind of a problem when it comes to burial space. So to address that issue, the South Korean government passed a law in 2000 that requires families to remove their loved ones from their graves after 60 years. This law caused the number of the burials to halve over the next decade, where people are now opting for cremation. And it's actually gotten to the point where 70% of the population now opts for cremation. But since South Korean culture calls for a high level of respect for one's ancestors, a large number of the population is very unhappy with simply turning their relatives into ash. So this is what's led to the foundation of Bonhyang. It's a company that will take those ashes and turn them into beads using heat. The beads come in a variety of colors, and the number of beads produced depends not only on the size of the individual, but also on their age, as younger people have a higher bone density and produce more ash. So as many as 8 cups of beads can be produced, but they're not worn as jewelry. Rather, they're placed in clean jars and displayed at home, giving people a beautiful way to remember their late relatives. The idea was apparently brought over to the United States, but never really gained popularity, and is now mostly confined to South Korea. If beads aren't your thing, it's also possible to then rather go with the compression into a diamond.
Yeah.
Even if it's just your penis.
I don't give a dang heck about my ancestors.
Did you just say dang heck?
Yeah. I don't give a dang heck about my ancestors. Why would I want to turn them into beads?
Fair enough. I do. I care much about my ancestors, and I want to turn many of them into beads. Especially some of the living ones. Yeah. So, lastly...
You skipped one, I think.
Did I?
Yeah, the Cavitano one.
Oh, yes. The Cavitano. Yeah,
that was cool.
Spanish Filipino ethnic group. For those of you who don't know, the Philippines was occupied and colonized by Spain for a really long time, and the after effects can still be felt today. So there's this Spanish Filipino ethnic group from the Cavite region of the island of Luzon. And although they're on the same island as the Ifuago and the Itneg, they are quite far away from those groups, so their funeral customs are quite different. Relative to the wide range of funeral customs practiced around the world, Cavitano burials are quite tame and very natural. Rather than mummification, cremation, or even straight-up burial, the Cavitano...
Or flaying.
Yeah. The Cavitano inter their dead inside trees. Bodies are placed vertically in hollow tree trunks, because the Cavitano believe that since trees give us life, we should return the favor and help give them life by giving up our bodies to them when we die. The specific tree to be used is usually selected by the deceased themselves before they die, either when they are getting older or close to death for some reason. And the whole concept is not much different to the use of tree pods. For those of you that know about how popular those have become more recently. Do you know what tree pods are?
Yeah, that's probably what I'm going to actually do. I mean, I don't know exactly what you're talking about with tree pods, but I know about the whole thing where, like, you basically plant a tree seed in your body cavity or something like that, and it grows out of your body using nutrients and shit.
Yeah, well, this is slightly different. The tree pods concept that has been popularized recently is this. There was a company that developed a method to cremate you, but to still leave some of the organic matter. Like, it was a semi-cremation. And,
okay.
And then the remains would be compressed into this egg-shaped pod that would have a tree seed in the center of the pod, and it would be buried, and several years later you would have a big magnificent tree that was you, is you, sort of. Okay, yeah. So that's the Cavatenno, which is very natural, very cool. I like it. And I wouldn't mind having that done to me, except that right now I'm living in a country where the word tree sort of makes people look at you quizzically because they don't really know what it is.
Damn. Definitely the most wholesome burial practice we got so far.
Yeah. Now we're going to go to one that isn't quite as wholesome. yeah, it's the last one I'm going to talk about because I really want to leave people with this image in their heads. So there are, obviously, some of these that I've mentioned are very bizarre ways to bury or cremate your dead, and this one group likes to get them back up again.
Yeah, none of the other ones are quite like an 80s comedy film.
Yeah, essentially, this group is called the Torajans, and they're an indigenous Indonesian group who like to take out their corpses of dead family members every 3 years and parade them around town. This is seen as a way to honor the memory of the dead, and it's called the Manene ritual, and it's considered a time to exhume the bodies of loved ones, change their clothes, clean them up, and spend a little quality time with them again.
I don't know, that seems pretty nice.
Perfectly reasonable,
especially
right?
The cleaning up part, you know? Spending time with them. You know?
Yeah, brush their teeth a bit, comb their hair. But in addition...
Brush the dirt off of them.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just that they do this. And I mean, in addition to new clothes, family members will tend to the bodies by mummifying them to ensure that they stick around as long as possible. The stories that I was reading, there was one guy, Peter Sampe Sambara. He's been dead for over 80 years, which means that his body has undergone this ritual over 25 times. Although he doesn't look particularly appealing, he doesn't look that bad, considering he died in 1932. Like, you can look him up. I'm not going to send you the link.
That's exactly what I'm doing now. Yeah, he looks pretty dead.
Yeah, yeah, dead, but like, for someone who's been out and about... Several,
yeah, I mean, he doesn't look that much worse than some alive people that I've seen.
Exactly. Okay.
Oh, this one he's got a nice hat in one of these. that does make him look better, you know. He looks younger without the white hair.
So, are you saying you want a hat to go with your diamond?
I wouldn't mind a hat. I don't know about that style. You know, I think that would be cultural appropriation for me to use that particular kind of hat. It does look very Southeast Asian. But yeah.
So something more like a fedora?
Oh, absolutely not a fedora, no. I'm not going to let people sully my memory like that.
Yeah, because that's totally what you should be concerned about.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure I'd be comfortable with people dragging my body around and displaying it and all of that. I've heard too many stories about necrophiliacs.
I'd be fine with it as long as they don't make fun of my missing penis.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I've got in the way of strange things. I think that's what we've got for this week. Just to let everyone know why we're taking a break, we've got a very top secret, project that we're working on.
I don't think you should tell anyone about that.
Well, I'm not going to tell them what it is, but I do want to let people know that it's not that we don't love and care about them, it's that we love and care about them so much that we're going to great lengths to provide absolutely fantastic content for our next season. And as part of that, we're putting a lot of stuff on the line. We're taking huge risks, and we're gonna ask.
No,
that
I'm knocking on doors, and Peter's doing undercover investigative journalism.
Yes, that's what we're gonna call it. I'm not being paid for any of this. regardless of what anyone says. It's journalistic. It's not opportunistic.
All right.
Okay, guys.
That's all we got. Yep. Hope you enjoyed it. Follow us on Twitter at NeighborSciPod. Facebook, just look up Neighbor Science. You'll find us, no problem.
Not to be confused with the Neighbor Science meme form, which you should also follow.
Yes. And then the website for this is postscarcitymagazine.com. We have both the zine that me and Justin Gallant started and the podcast. All right. That's it for us.
Have a good one, folks.
Talk to you next year. Bye. So we forgot about one thing that was actually the inspiration for this episode, called excarnation, which is the practice of removing flesh and organs before burial, leaving only the bones. One of the coolest ways that excarnation is done is called a Tower of Silence, and it's a Zoroastrian tradition. They basically put bodies up in a tower and let vultures pick their bones clean. So there's a couple of interesting things about that through history. In Iran, there was a problem where Islam forbade excess dissection of corpses, and so there were very few corpses available for study through official channels. So the Towers of Silence were broken into in order to take the bodies, to the dismay and humiliation of the Zoroastrian community. There's also a problem in India, starting in the 1990s and continuing through basically today, which is that a drug called diclofenac was introduced into livestock farming, and it's toxic to vultures, and so any vultures who ate carrion from an animal that was on that drug would die. And so from the early 1990s to 2008, the population of vultures had dropped 99.9%, so there's not even really enough for them to consume a body nowadays, whereas in prior to that, a body could be disposed of in minutes by excarnation. So some people are opting for burial, and some are trying to use captively bred vultures as well as solar concentrators to accelerate decomposition. Another practice of excarnation is Tibetan, and also practice in other regions of China and India and Bhutan, but it's called a sky burial, and it's where a corpse is placed on top of a mountain, and again allowed to be eaten by carrion birds, as well as exposed to the elements. And in this practice, when the bones remain, they're broken up with mallets, ground with tsampa, which is barley flour with tea and yak butter or milk, and given to the crows and hawks that have waited for the vultures to go away. So that's a pretty interesting one as well.